hosts Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. That's Eco Living in Action, Thursdays at 2:30pm and replayed Monday mornings at 8:30. Proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
And welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, host of this show. So, kia ora everybody. I've come back to New Zealand with renewed passion to plant native trees and to be involved in assisting others to do the same. For lots of reasons. For me, the most important is the biodiversity that they harbour, but also for sequestering atmospheric carbon, for reducing soil runoff, for stabilising our weather patterns. The benefits that trees bring us are really substantial. Now, before humans arrived in New Zealand, almost 100% of the country was covered in forest, and now it's approximately 31%. The good news is, as I'm sure you're probably all aware, is that our New Zealand government is on the brink of assisting us to plant a further 1 billion trees here in New Zealand. Now, much of this might be likely to be exotics because currently they bring bigger returns to private landowners, but this is also an opportunity for landowners to plant natives. In this show, I'll be chatting with my guest about some of the biodiversity benefits of native forests, as well as how we can grow healthy native trees and healthy forests for now and into the future. In the studio today, I have Philip Dunn, co-owner of Ribbonwood Nurseries, which is a specialist native New Zealand plant nursery based here in Dunedin. It's actually in Bradford. Now, Philip has had a long love affair with native trees and has been running Ribbonwood Nurseries for over 30 years. So, Philip, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on now. So, I guess even you've loved trees even longer than 30 years, have you?
Since I was quite young, yeah. I was really primary school age, just grew up in Timaru, where there wasn't actually a lot of native vegetation, and yet I just always liked native plants and native wildlife. And I know it's right, summer holiday time, and we'd debate, you know, where the family was going to go. My brothers would always say, "Want to go to somewhere with a beach?" I would say, "Want to go somewhere where there's some bush." So it's just I've just always had that interest in it. So it's been great to be able to work with plants right through.
Yeah, it's just a happy feeling when you're in the forest, isn't it? You know, so share with us a bit of, you know, some of the wonder of trees, because, you know, well, we feel it when we're in it, when we're in a big forest and the trees are towering above us, you know, but.
Yeah, we do. The trees are just, I mean, there are the I guess, the practical, pragmatic sort of reasons. And as you say, it's absorbing carbon dioxide significantly. Obviously, plants, we are totally dependent on them in terms of just releasing oxygen in the environment that we need to actually survive as animals. But there are the aspects of shelter, of food. But as you mentioned, I think just the fact that being amongst plants is... we need it. I can't really imagine a world without trees. It just, in terms of just how we feel it, our state of mind, to me, trees are essential.
That's right. I think the studies have shown that as soon as we go into an intact native deciduous forest, actually, or even it's in the northern hemisphere, but just an intact old growth forest, that we just feel more relaxed, you know.
We're very much a part of nature, and is that sort of innate link, I think, with large trees that we have.
Yeah, and they're living on a whole different time scale. You know, we live our little lives, and some of these trees, you know,
A very long time, and, you know, I think we're probably all acquainted with things like Kauri in the north, and do see some of those trees that are 1,000, even 2,000 years old, perhaps, and they really are quite awe-inspiring. Maybe closer to home, things like the Totara and, say, Peel Forest in South Canterbury, 1,000, 1,200 years old, and just immense trees that, as you say, outlived us all. There's just something about being in that sort of environment. And I guess we often see things in one little narrow piece of time, because that's what we inhabit, and yet we don't always see the patterns that are going on, the changes. The forest is not totally static. It's quite dynamic, and with changing climate, which the cooler periods, the warmer periods that we, you know, typically have, there are changes in species composition of, for example, New Zealand forests, and in colder periods we've had predominance of beech trees and warmer periods have had a predominance of, say, some of the big emergent pottercarp trees, the Remu and Matai and Totara, things that give a lot of the characters to our native bush. And so the proportions just have traditionally changed over time and are changing now today.
So you're thinking that we're seeing perhaps a shift to a more mixed pottercarp kind of forest?
I think we will see that because quite clearly things are warming up, and that will happen. It won't happen in our particular lifetimes. That's sort of the point. So it's part of a change, but it's quite a slow change, especially looking at trees that live for centuries. It's going to take a while for those patterns to sort of emerge, but we are going to start to see some of those changes, I think.
Mm. And obviously you focus on planting natives, and so why have you particularly chosen to make that focus on natives?
I guess because I am a New Zealander. I've grown up in that New Zealand natural environment. I am, as you mentioned in your introduction, that we have spent the last 150 to 200 years systematically demolishing so much of it. I think we have a responsibility to actually start to restore some of that, to redress the balance to some degree, and do our bit. And I think it's if we all do something, it's going to be really quite significant.
Yeah. So we can make quite a difference just by planting that one tree and planting a few more. But yeah. In terms of the biodiversity, are there any particular trees that you would recommend to people?
We get people that come to the nursery, quite a common question is what can we plant to encourage like native birds into our garden, and in more recent years we're getting requests like what can we do to encourage bees in the garden. There's concern about the loss of bees worldwide, and what can we do to encourage, say, lizards into our garden. Questions we didn't used to get answered. I think there's a growing awareness of the biodiversity, of the fact that we don't just plant a garden as a sort of collection of specimen trees, but as part of a living system, and including the invertebrates and things that live on, would naturally live on the trees, that maybe the insect-eating birds will then come along and help to control and feed on. So I try and encourage people not necessarily just to expect every plant to look totally pristine, that you need to blat insecticides all over your plants because it's got a hole or two in a leaf. That is how they're supposed to be. It's part of nature, and just letting nature take its course, we can see a whole lot more of those sort of interactions with plants and animals happening in your own backyard, which is great.
Yeah, and because every tree species has its own collection, like of, different weevils and borers and, insects, that are specific to that species. Mm. And then in turn, then you've got the birds that can feed on them. So actually, in some ways, unless obviously you've got an infestation, it's not a bad thing to see a certain amount of consumption of your tree's leaves, is it?
I think it's quite a good thing, actually. It's all about plants like Muehlenbeckia, for example, which many would see as a weed because one of the species is quite a rampant grower and does occasionally need to be just knocked back a little bit, but there are other species as well. But that particular genus of native plants, often quite an inconspicuous one, not attractive flowers particularly or anything like that, but it is the most significant genus for invertebrates in New Zealand and the New Zealand fauna. So
right.
Interesting, yeah.
That is interesting, yeah. So the Muehlenbeckia, but I guess any of them, or would you suggest people if they've got the room that they plant a mixture?
Well, there's little ground cover ones which are quite well behaved. There's a medium sized shrub, Muehlenbeckia estonii, which is just a great garden plant, a lot of character, very, very hardy. I just love that plant. No, we probably wouldn't recommend planting the particularly rampant vine, which, as I say, sometimes needs a bit of control measure. But any of them are great. They're good for birds as well because they produce quite a fleshy little fruit. Yeah. Which everything from wax size to kiraru will feed on. So, birds as well.
Yeah. And we're lucky that we still have the kiraru, aren't we? Because it, in particular, some of the trees really require it, don't they?
Oh, they do, yeah. Dunedin is almost sort of national headquarters for kiraru, really. We've just always had lots of pigeons here. So it's great to see them here. And they feed over a wide range of species, introduced plants as well as natives, but they're very dependent on natives, particularly through the winter time when a lot of their introduced food species are in fact deciduous and of no value to them. So lots of trees you can plant, but quaffia in particular is one which they spend a lot of winter feeding on the foliage and the new flower buds that are developing right through winter. So that is a really good one. And of course, it's with the quaffia flowers, you're encouraging the honey-eating birds as well. And there are quite a few varieties to choose from. So you don't need a 10-metre-high tree. There are smaller versions, and there's sort of low spready shrubs like the Stevens Island one from which will pop out random flowers right through the wintertime, probably 6 or 8 months of the year. So if you incorporate a few different varieties, even within the same group of plants, like quaffia, for example, you can finish up with quite an extended period of flowering, which means in terms of birds, you're providing food in your garden for that much longer time. So well worth considering just mixing it up a bit.
Yep. So having that, thinking about the whole year. Okay, so let's move on to trees themselves and, advice on how we might plant trees and what's your recommendation? So let's say, you've got quite a reasonable size section or perhaps a small holding or a little farmlet. What would you recommend? Let's say it's in paddock. Clean slate.
Yeah, we get people starting from in paddock, and it's not the easiest. If you're sort of in a rye grass that's sort of 5 centimetres high, there's no shelter, for example. It's just a question of really choosing the right plants for the right site. So you do need to do that planning thing, I think, fairly carefully. And it may be, very likely will be, in fact, like a stage planting. So if it's coastal, for example, and you're getting strong salt-laden winds, it really restricts the number of plants that you can begin with. So you need to choose things, and normally you'd want to choose probably things that are reasonably quick growing, that are quite hardy to the particular conditions that you've got, and whether it's wet or dry, I guess soil moisture along with exposure are probably the two most important environmental factors to consider, that and probably severity of frost as well would be coming up third. But just to choose some of those things initially that are going to start to modify the environment in a favourable way, that are going to reduce the wind speed over the plant somewhat, provide some shading, provide probably more even moisture, less temperature extremes, because plants do, as you've mentioned, sort of modify the environment around them and, reduce the extremes both in terms of hot and cold. So make the environment more favourable for a wider range of plants. So while in year one you may not be able to just grow every particular type of plant which you would like to, it can be and should be, in fact, a stage thing where you start with some tough, hardy, maybe quick-growing things, and then over the next several years start to introduce a greater range of species.
Right. And do you recommend quite dense planting, or does it need to be spacious enough that then you can come in and plant the secondary trees?
Either a bit of spacing or just be prepared to come in later with a chainsaw or something and actually knock a few things out, which is not a bad approach either. In some ways, things going up together reasonably densely sort of provide some mutual shelter and shading, and it does just help their establishment compared with just starting with really quite sparse planting. So not too sparse, not hard to create gaps later. And I think a lot of public plantings probably do start off the same way. Start off with these hardy colonising species, and which, while they're tough and while they're fast, often are quite short-lived. And so, we need to see beyond that and not just plant those species and forget them, because I say that you do see that happening a lot. You need to look at that sort of very much a longer-term plan and start introducing later some of the longer-lived species, things like the remu and kakatea and matai, those sort of trees that are going to be around for centuries. So,
right. So are you seeing that maybe not in the next year, but maybe a 3 or 4 years down the track?
Exactly, yep. And the number of years just very much depends on the sort of conditions. Right. If you've got a good rich soil, if you've got a bit of shelter, obviously that can happen sooner. But those big tree species, but also understory species, which also often get neglected in revegetation type plantings, the fern species, which one or two will come in by themselves, but a lot won't. And so it's nice just to come back and think of some of those sort of things. Dunedin has over 100 species of ferns naturally in the immediate Dunedin area, and yet people very much seem to overlook them for some reason. We are a country of ferns, but, you know,
we should use
them.
That's right, and they make it. They're so beautiful. I love the ferns under the forest.
Ferns are great, yeah.
And, you know, one of the things, you know, we all love planting trees. It feels great, you know, you say, right, I've planted, you know, how many trees today, but it's the ongoing maintenance, you know, like, so in that first year or 2 years, having to come back and release the trees and you know, get rid of grasses in particular, I guess, that grow up. What's your recommendation? Like, how do you recommend to people in terms of that their follow-up on the trees?
Follow-up is really important and, as you say, often gets neglected. Yeah, people start with great enthusiasm to plant, but not quite so stimulating perhaps to come back and do the weed control. But the, as you mentioned, really the exotic grass species in particular really slow down the growth of woody trees and shrubs dramatically. People often underestimate the importance of it. Broadleaf weeds don't seem to have a huge effect, but those introduced grasses develop a really tight, matted sort of root system. They outcompete woody trees and shrubs for nutrients and for water. So they need to be controlled back, I don't know, half a metre or more around the base of the plant, and some sort of mulch is probably quite a good way to do it. People sometimes use coffee sacks, which you can pick up quite cheaply, and they'll last for some time. I don't think the sort of plastic-type weed mats are, well, they're okay maybe for a short term. They're probably better than nothing, but I don't think they're quite the ideal solution. But there are wool-type mats and coir-type weed mats which you can get, which by the time the plant has sort of grown a bit and spread out and starting to shade the ground, they will have be starting to decompose, and they've gone. So that's quite a nice solution.
Yes, it is. I do like the wool mats, and because the plastic, you know, it seems like a good idea at the time, but then over time you either have to take it all up again, or you've basically got all this plastic that's part of your environment now into the future. You know,
it's not ideal. No, it's not. I guess the other another issue too, and planting and particularly not in the middle of town, as you know, with rabbits, which are quite an issue if you're maybe on the edge of town or on a lifestyle block or something like that. And most species will be eaten by rabbits, particularly in the wintertime, and they get a bit hungry, even if they're not that palatable. They will often eat it. So it's quite disheartening to go and plant a whole lot of plants and then find a rabbit or hares have come in and munched them down or chopped them off in the case of hares. So, you know, some sort of rabbit protection, either wire netting or you can get sort of a hard, reusable plastic sleeve which you can, you know, use over and over. So that is worth considering if you have rabbits or property's not rabbit fence.
Do you stake? Because I know there's different schools of thought on staking. You know, there's one argument that, you know, obviously the tree needs protected when it's young, but the other one that it kind of learns its own resilience if it's not staked.
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on the site, and if you're on a really, really windy site, I think it probably is important to stake, and some plants more than others, and plants that come up on a single leader, if that is their basic normal structure of the plant, I think you do want to keep that leader going straight, so staking is probably important. If it's a multi-branched, spready sort of shrub-type form, probably not so much. I think the other thing about staking too is if you are staking like a taller tree, that you don't stake it to the top of the plant. Often just needs quite a low stake to stop that root ball from rocking around initially, which makes it hard for the developing new roots to get out into the surrounding soil. But if you hold that root ball constantly, sort of more or less firmly in place, the roots can just get established more quickly. You do want to allow the top of the plant to actually move around in the wind, because as you mentioned, that the plant is then going to lay down more structural woody tissue to support itself, and I think you want to let the plant do that for itself.
Yeah. Right. And so just to come back to the ferns, so at some point you would only put in the ferns when the grasses is gone, is that right? Because they wouldn't compete, is it?
When the grasses are gone, or and usually when there's some shade, but then I say there is such a range of fern species. Some will grow in full sun, some will grow in surprisingly dry conditions. We have this probably idea that all ferns need to be damp and shady and cool and moist and all that sort of thing, and you know, some of them do, but in New Zealand we have some grow on coastal cliffs, you know, covered in salt spray and wind and really quite dry through to the subalpine areas where they'll sit under snow, where they'll cope with quite heavy frost and quite a lot of wind as well. So there's some really tough ferns out there too. So yeah, I think anybody can fit ferns into their garden and probably any part of their garden as long as they choose the right ones.
Right. And then another quick practical question is just the trees. And obviously, you know, if I go into a nursery, I'll see trees of different sizes, you know, in terms of, you know, ready to plant out. What's your recommendation on the size of the tree? What's the ideal size of tree to plant?
Yeah, I don't know. Again, it depends on the site. If you're not too exposed, there's no reason why you can't put, you know, at least some large plants in, especially if it's a new property and you build a house and there is nothing but bare dirt or whatever there. It's nice to start off with even a handful or two or three or four, you know, larger trees rather than everything going in a half a metre high and just sitting back and waiting for a few years for things to develop. It's quite nice to have a little bit of that sort of instant established approach. I guess maybe we live in an instant gratification society, we want everything big. I wouldn't recommend that, but it is nice to have some larger things. And I guess in terms of birds too, even one large tree in a property, often birds will fly in onto that tree and then they'll come down and feed on lower things. They might come and feed on the ground, but they often won't come straight into that environment. So if you've got, so even one larger tree, it very often it'll just bring those birds into your property and down onto your lower trees and shrubs. So quite important.
Yes, that's right. And obviously, in a natural environment, you know, in an established forest, you've got trees of all different ages, and so I guess over time, this does eventually happen, doesn't it? Even if you do plant a lot of trees the same age, eventually over time, it happens. But it's beyond our lifetime.
It is beyond our lifetime. That's that is a problem. And yeah. I think we can to a degree short-circuit that sort of natural successional stage in nature. If there's a storm event, whatever, and a forest cover is removed as a landslip or something, you know, over time, some little species will come in, some quick-growing things like tutu perhaps, and then some of the faster-growing areas and kānuku and that sort of thing comes in, these quite light-demanding species. Once they have grown up, they'll slowly be replaced by some of those longer-term forest species, but it can take, you know, literally a couple of hundred years, whereas since not many of us have that time frame available to us, we can, you know, start with some of the tougher species, but quite early on we can introduce some of those other things. And so, you know, we can actually basically compress that whole successional stage.
So we can enjoy it now.
Yeah, exactly.
Or soon.
Yes.
But thinking now into the future, and we talked about this a little bit at the beginning, you know, as you say, we've got changing climate, an increase in global temperature. Would you be recommending that people plant some trees that perhaps are used to that are more, you know, native to north of here?
I think that'd be perfectly reasonable to do that, particularly in a garden situation. Maybe not. I guess most botanists and ecologists wouldn't suggest that for natural revegetation, large scale programs to actually introduce some of those northern species, but I think in a garden context, I think it's a very reasonable thing to do. As you sort of alluding to, I think those current distributions will change and are changing, and we're going to see some of those more northern species find their way down here anyway. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't just hurry the process along a bit. There's also some great garden plants that aren't naturally in the immediate Dunedin area. Some really great bird plants, and you know, I think it's just nice to have that wider suite of plants available for us to use in a garden context.
Yes. Okay, so I think, you know, I'm feeling quite optimistic coming back that perhaps we're going to see a shift, you know, in New Zealand, that we're going to have more trees. Like, obviously, New Zealand is better than a lot of other countries in the world. So I think it's around 7% in Ireland of forest cover. But so I guess that's something to look forward to, and another billion trees.
I think it's a great goal. And while we still have more forest cover than some countries, it's not an even spread of forest, and a lot of what remains is in, you know, hill country, difficult to access country, while a lot of the more accessible lowland type, better terrain, easier stuff has already been logged. So, you know, we need to try and recreate that whole cross-section of habitats.
Right. So, obviously, Phil, you've got lots of information in your head, and you've also got a great nursery there for people to come to. So for people to find you, Ribbonwood Nursery, 89 Glenelg Street at the corner of Glenelg and Ronay Streets in Bradford. Telephone 453 4673. And, or they can look at you online, ribbonwoodnurseries.org.nz. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
So much. It's great to come along. Thanks.
And thank you for listening. I'm Maureen Howard, and this is the last show that I'm doing that's supported by Sustainable Dunedin City, but I will be back, and many, many thanks to Sustainable Dunedin City. I will be back with support from Taste Nature. So thank you for listening, and I hope to catch you next week.
Streets of London town. Pave all the streets of London. language, your interests, your community.